All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome inside the Radio Laurier Studios here on the Waterloo campus of Wilfrid Laurier University. This is Golden Bold, the sound of Laurier sports. We talk local sports, we talk college sports, university sports, we talk professional sports as well. We talk everything going on in the world of athletic competition. My name is Ian Bailey. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. Fun show lined up, a lot of topics to discuss around the world of sports. Of course, my voice may sound a bit different. I've been quite under the weather this entire week. I've been on a steady diet of fishermen's friends and bananas. So that's where I am in my life. But we're going to power through here. Of course, this is Gold and Bold. We'll start off with a quick news of Laurier Athletics. Since weird time of year for athletics news coming from Laurier. It's the end of semester, close to it. It's March 28th. Let it be known, it's like a week away from the term ending, which is wild. No one thought we. It comes up every year, and it feels such a slog to get to it. And then once it comes, it's like, oh, that was quick. Where'd that come from? So, such you know, are the plights of being a student. But yeah, it's almost the end of semester. Final papers are due, exams are coming up. Of course, that's about the time you start shedding. You get all stressed out. So it's a fun time to be a student. But it means that a lot of Laurier Athletics and varsity teams, they're cooling down, their seasons are done, the banquets are happening and are beginning to be done, and all that fun stuff. So there's not too much to share when it comes to Laurier Athletics. Of course, Outstanding Woman of Laurier, a gala was held last night. Great to see the woman in sports surrounding Laurier Goldhawks and its greater community be honored. We have a football banquet coming up later. We have the athletic banquet coming up later as well. All these year-end celebrations of achievements and performance in Wilfrid Laurier University Athletics. Recently, of course, the men's football 2025 schedule has been announced, the regular season schedule. Of course, they're playing some preseason stuff in June, but they get started August 23rd at Guelph. The Guelph Griffins host the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks August 23rd for the first game of the reigning OUA champions and Yates Cup champions. The Golden Hawks, they face Guelph, and next week they're down in Windsor. Next week they're at Queens. Next week they're at home against Waterloo. Then they're at Ottawa. Then they're versus Toronto. Then they're versus Carleton. Then they're at Western. So last game of the regular season is against Western, which is amazing schedule making by everyone involved. So hats off to them. Elsewhere in Laurier Athletic news. Of course, Golden Hawks, a pair of them, and a couple of them are at the 2025 CFL Combine. Of course, Taylor Algersma of the Golden Hawks. They're not even at CFL. He was down at the NFL rookie class in Combine. But in CFL, we have Ethan Jordan and Malia Coate, of course. Ethan Jordan, the All-Canadian receiver, and Malia Coate, the defensive back for the Golden Hawks. They're at the CFL Combines, the draft-eligible class for 2025 this year. And they're turning some heads, making some good plays. There's a write-up about them on the Athletics website, should you want to read more. Elsewhere in Athletics news, there's not too much going on. As I mentioned, it's a slow time for athletics around campus. The intramural face-off was a couple days ago. Intramurals are wrapping up. Lazaritis and art students faced off in basketball and hockey recently. Student versus student warfare on campus for bragging rights and superiority. Check the results of those because that's always fun, great way to build students' camaraderie and competition. But in terms of athletics, there's not a whole lot going on. And of course, we'll move into professional sports later. I was going to take a lot more prep time. I haven't taken a lot of prep time the last couple of weeks. I've been busy, but today I had nothing going on in the morning. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to, you know, take some decent prep, take some decent notes, really, you know, make a good show. That wasn't the case. I took a really long shower, which is not the best excuse in the world, but it was nice, really warm. It was a cold, frigid morning, really gray. I haven't had a good shower. Again, I was feeling quite under the weather earlier this week, so it was just a relief to have a really nice shower. So I took like an hour in there, which is way longer than I should have, so I had zero time to really take any notes for this. So we are winging it. If you can't tell, you probably can. But of course, in professional sports news, I don't know if you heard or not, it's MLB opening day yesterday. And they also meant it was opening day for the Blue Jays, who got walloped by the Baltimore Orioles 12-2. They lost by 10, which isn't, you know, not end of the world. It's literally the first game of the season against a strong Baltimore Orioles team. That being said, the Jays had a strong spring training. They won their league in spring training. And I might be the Oracle. I might be Nostradamus, because I remember on one of the episodes to talk about the spring training, I said something along the lines of, they could win the spring training league, which they did, but they'll still drop the opening day game by like 10-0. And it wasn't 10-0. It was 12-2, but still a difference of 10. So that was pretty close. I was going to move on, but no, let's stick around for that 12-2 loss just for a second. Jose Berrios was the starter for that game. He had 3 home runs allowed in the first few innings. Orioles hit 6 home runs. Berrios allowed 3 home runs in the first 5 innings. And the Orioles hit 6 home runs. That's half their home runs. No way should 3 home runs be half a team's home runs on an opening day at home. I understand the Orioles are a stronger team than the Blue Jays. I'm not saying the Blue Jays should have won. Regardless of their spring training success, spring training ultimately doesn't mean that much. And I still don't think the Blue Jays have a particularly strong team. So I'm not expecting Blue Jays to do much. Maybe that's pessimism. I'm just not expecting the Blue Jays to do much. That being said, you can't allow 3 home runs, same pitcher in the first like 5 innings, and then allow them to hit 3 more home runs. The Orioles had 6 home runs. The Blue Jays had 4 hits. 6 home runs versus 4 hits. Eye test, that's not very good. Moneyball analytics, that's also not very good either. So it's very few cases where analytics and eye test will agree. 6 home runs versus 4 hits, not a winning recipe. For fans of other teams, though, I'll do a quick synopsis of the opening day results. Of course, again, Orioles beat the Blue Jays 12-2. Blue Jays starting their season off in the most Toronto way possible. Yankees beat the Brewers 4-2. Yankees, again, strong team. Red Sox, I know our station manager here, Jack, is a Red Sox fan. They beat the Texas Rangers 5-2 yesterday. Marlins eke out over the Pittsburgh Pirates 5-4. Giants 6-4. Guardians 7-4 over the Royals. Angels get 1 against the Chicago White Sox, get 8. The White Sox, they haven't won a game in 4 years. 8-1. It could be their year. Astros 3-1 over the Mets. Cardinals 5-3 over the Twins. Cubs 10-6 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. Dodgers 5-4 over the Tigers. Close one. I'm a big fan of the Tigers as well. Mariners 4, Oakland, or formerly Oakland Athletics 4-2. Today, the Blue Jays, again, face off against the Orioles for 7:07 p.m. First pitch. And all those matchups I just said will carry on. Tonight, of course, the earliest first pitch, 4:10 p.m., Rockies at the Tampa Bay Rays. They don't play opening day. Their opening day is today. So, big news for Rockies or Rays fans. Also, big news for Braves and Padres, who also play their first game as well. As you transition out of that, we'll look around at the NHL, which, of course, we talk about the NHL a lot on the show. I'm a big NHL guy, and it's a very, very interesting playoff race. But before I get into the playoff race, I have to discuss a team that's not in the playoff race. The Maple Leafs, another Toronto team, who is prone to disappointment. The Toronto Maple Leafs got a big win over the Philadelphia Flyers and essentially broke the Flyers as they announced their head coach is fired after that game. John Tortorella, the divisive, controversial Torts, fired by the Philadelphia Flyers yesterday morning. Now, I like Tortorella. I think he's a good coach. He's an old school coach. He's a very, you know, no bull crap. Give it your all every single game. Not afraid. Very animated. Not afraid to say what's on his mind. Won't be polite all the time. You know, not an old school coach. Not a modern, you know, build relationships, rapport coach. Very old school, you know, demanding coach. Some players like that, some players don't. Some fans like that, some fans don't. I like it. I like that style. Partly because I think, in the right place, on the right team, with the right roster, that can bring out the best in them. That push, that demands can bring out the best of them rather than a more tempered, reserved, borderline submissive style of leadership. That being said, some rosters just won't work. Some players just don't respond to that that heat, and they need to get out of the kitchen. So I understand there's time and a place for that style of coaching. However, I like that style of coaching, especially when used on a good team that can lead to great success. And I like Tortorella as a coach, but I also like him, again, because he's very entertaining. And he gets fired by the Philadelphia Flyers, which is a shame. Again, I like Tortorella. However, the Flyers, again, outside of the playoff race, they're the bottom of the Metropolitan Division. They haven't won in regulation. They haven't won without using overtime. They haven't won just straight 60 minutes, three periods of hockey in over a month. They've had a regulation win since February 25th, since last month. And it's a strange situation, too, because the Maple Leafs beat the Flyers, Tortorella's Flyers, 7-2 just a couple days ago on Tuesday. So 7-2 loss, Maple Leafs won against the Flyers. It was the Flyers, like, 11th loss in probably as many games, maybe 12, 13 games. It was a rough stretch for Flyers fans. And after the game, Tortorella, you know, he's not afraid to say what he thinks. And in the press conference, you know, post-game review with the press, he says, "I'm not really interested in learning how to coach in this type of season where we're at right now." It's a bit of a strange thing to say. What do you mean? When he says, "I'm not really interested in learning how to coach this type of season," the Flyers are in a rebuilding season. Rebuilding, for those unaware, means basically you're expecting to be at the bottom of the standings. You don't have a very talented roster, and for your players who are pretty talented, you've traded them off. You traded them off for prospects, young players who are in the minor leagues, who are in your developmental pool, looking to become effective major leaguers, and for draft picks. which you can use to select the best upcoming young players in the next drafts. That's what rebuilding is. So you're at the bottom of the standings, you're selling off a lot of your good players, and you're accumulating a lot of draft picks, and you're at the bottom of the standings hoping to get a pretty nifty look at the draft lottery, of course. The teams at the bottom of the standings have the best chance of nailing the first overall draft pick in that season's upcoming draft. All that to say, John Tortorella coming out and saying that where we're at right now, the type of season like we're trying to have, the rebuilding season, I'm not really interested in coaching this type of season. In learning how to coach in this type of season. He's not used to being on a rebuilding team. And I guess that public comment probably spurred general manager Daniel Breer to fire John Tortorella from his position as head coach on the Philadelphia Flyers. And is this the end of John Tortorella's coaching career? I don't think so. However, he is getting up there in age. He is 66 years old. He's been around the league a long while. Of course, he started coaching in 2000. Of course, he won the Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So he started coaching in 2000 with the Tampa Bay Lightning, won the Stanley Cup with them in 2004. I'm a Flames fan. It was in. Nonetheless, Lightning end up winning that Stanley Cup final series. And Lightning win the Stanley Cup with John Tortorella at the helm. Then he goes on to coach for the New York Rangers in 2009. He goes on to coach the Vancouver Canucks. I also like the Canucks, and I like Tortorella's tenure on the Canucks. He started 2013. Then he went to Columbus in 2015. He was there for quite a while. I say quite a while. He was there for 6 years, which is more than average for an NHL head coach. And then he gets, I was going to say gets fired. He gets mutually parted ways with by the Blue Jackets. And then he goes to the Flyers. He's been on the Flyers for the past couple of years. He's also head coached the United States national team. For the men's American team at international competitions, including the IIHF World Championship and the 2016 World Cup of Hockey, which is pretty good. And I still think he can be an effective head coach. However, he has coached for 5 teams in 25 years for an average tenure of 5 years, which is I think is fairly good for an NHL head coach, but shows that he's not anywhere for 7 or 8 or 9 or even 10 years like we see a Jared Bednar or we see a John Cooper of the Lightning or we see a Rod Brind'Amour of the Hurricanes. It seems like he joins a team and then they get a big jump and then they start kind of falling away or lose the room, lose the trust of the management or the players, and then he like gets let go and then joins another team, gives them a bump, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That being said, as soon as Tortorella was fired, immediately everyone started harping and going, he's got to join the Rangers. Hold up. New York Rangers need a head coach that is not named Peter Laviolette, who they have now, who has done at best and at kindest a suboptimal job as head coach of the team, and at harshest, an awful job as head coach of that franchise. The New York Rangers, aside from the Vancouver Canucks, have had the most mismanaged, most disappointing, most preposterous season of any franchise, and they're still somewhat in the playoff hunt. Let it be known. So are the Canucks, but so are the Rangers. And the Rangers season, they should be contenders. They have a very strong team. Shesterkin, who, when he's playing good and has good defense in front of him, like any goalie, is one of the best goaltenders in the world. Adam Fox, great defender. They have a great defense core in New York. Then look at their up front. They have Zibanejad, great player. They have Panarin, great player. Trocheck, great player. Lafreniere is evolving into a pretty solid player. And a bunch of great players sprinkled down the line. They had Kako, who didn't turn out well, and they eventually traded. They had Trouba, the captain. They traded their captain this year. That's the type of season they're having. And Pierre Laviolette is one of the main reasons the Rangers are, he's just not the right coach anymore for the Rangers. I think Tortorella going to the Rangers is a good idea. He, of course, again, already coached the Rangers back around the turn of 2010. Exact dates, 2008 to 2013, where he made the playoffs with the Rangers 4 of the 5 years, made it to the conference finals in 2012, of course, end up losing to the Devils, and then went on to lose to the Kings in that year's Stanley Cup Finals. That being said, I think a return or a reuniting with the Rangers is a good idea for Tortorella. He can really, you know, kick the top performing players into that gear where they need to perform and, you know, not be too reserved or unafraid to kind of push those buttons. I think that's the type of coach that the Rangers need. Or speaking of the Rangers, speaking of the NHL playoff picture, the Rangers find themselves at 74 points, which is 1 point away from that second wildcard position, still currently held by the Montreal Canadiens. 10 games left to go for the Rangers. Canadiens do have a game in hand at only 71 games played versus the Rangers 72. And the Canadiens are 1 point ahead. But the Rangers at 74 points, but the Islanders, the other New York team, or one of the three New York teams, not including Buffalo, but Buffalo has never been near the playoffs in about 15 years. The Islanders at 74 points as well. So they're also 1 point behind Canadiens for that last wild card spot in the East. The way the Blue Jackets at 73 points. Woohoo! That's one win. That's 2 points away from the Canadiens for the second wild card position in the East. Also in the mix are the Red Wings, who are still somehow in the mix after having a terrible start to March into mid-March. I think at one point they were like 1-8 this month. In the last 10, they're now 3-7, which is not what you want to see at all if you're contending for a playoff position. But somehow, some way, they're still in contendership. With 10 games left in the season, they're 3 points behind. However, they would need to jump the Blue Jackets, Rangers, Islanders, and the Montreal Canadiens. The Bruins at 69 points, likely. They're also on a 7-game losing streak with 9 games left in the season. That's not going to happen. The Penguins, same amount of points, 69 points. Also, not going to happen. Mathematically, are they eliminated? No. Mathematically, are the Flyers eliminated? No, they're at 67 points. Are they going to make the playoffs? No. So, it's a very, very tight East for that second wildcard position. That first wildcard position is held comfortably by the Ottawa Senators, who finally look like this is the year they are actually going to break through. It seems like we've been saying that probably since 2021, 2022. Of course, their last appearance in the playoffs was that 2017 Andrew Hammond Hamburglar run. Still one of my favorite times watching hockey. Eric Carlson and Mark Stone. And that great roster of 2017. Captivated by, of course, Andrew Hammond, the out-of-nowhere legendary goaltenders in the latter half of that season to not only make the playoffs, but keep that momentum riding well into the playoffs. Of course, going to the conference finals, only to lose to Chris Kunitz and the Penguins. Still painful. I believe it was like second overtime and they lost that playoff run. And I haven't seen the playoffs since. And a lot of those members of that team, if not every single member of that team, is gone. And they rebuilt And 2022 looked like they might be on the way back. They have a strong roster. Didn't happen. 2023, they have a strong roster. Maybe back. Didn't happen. 2024, they have a strong roster. Maybe going to, they're going to be back. Didn't happen. 2025, though, they're back. And they're, like, they're good. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They have 81 points. They won't catch Lightning or the Panthers for second and third in the Atlantic Division. They're both at 89 points. That being said, Senators could do some damage in the playoffs, which is the first time anyone said that in 8 years. So, well done. And congratulations to the Ottawa Senators for that feat, as we're approaching 1:30, and we're opening up the lines here. Our first caller, we might have a second one. He is yet to respond, which is unfortunately characteristic of his. So we'll see if he actually does or not. However, our first caller, and if I don't get the second caller, then he'll just stay on. First caller will get set up, of course. You've heard him on the show a couple times. I've been on his show a couple times. It's a great little partnership we have with Campus Sports Shows. Of course, this will be Jackson Lee coming on the call soon, the host of Swinging a Drive Home on CKLU 96.7, of course, Laurentian University is up in Sudbury, their campus sports show. So it's a good little partnership we have here, and he'll be back on the show imminently here on Golden Bold to share some thoughts on the sports world as well. So we'll get that set up here. If I was foreseeing, I would have set it up earlier. However, I'm not. That being said, we'll open up the lines. We'll see if we get him in here. And typically it takes a bit to work. Typically, maybe it works right away. Jackson, are you on the line?
Jackson seems to be online.
Maybe try that again.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Are we trying that again?
Maybe. Maybe not. Let me.
Oh.
I think like you're rather quiet.
Well, that wasn't my intention.
Can you be louder?
Are we trying this? What's?
Can you try being louder?
I can try being louder.
Can you hold it closer to your mouth? And there he goes. All right. Usually it works quite well. Usually I have no issue with the volume, but I pumped him right up to the top and did not work. Nonetheless, we'll keep an eye on the NHL playoff picture as we'll try receiving him again.
Receiving him again.
And about the same volume. Check my audio levels here. How are you? How's it going today, Jackson?
It's going all right. How are you?
Good, good. All right. Well, my audio software says you're doing fine. So maybe I'm just going deaf. Nonetheless, it's going well here. It's a rather gray day in Waterloo, but that's also Waterloo. It's always gray in Waterloo. How gray is it in Sudbury?
Oh, it's pretty gray up here. It's got a lot of snow last night, a lot of rain last night too. It's kind of going back and forth, but things have seemed to have mellowed out here, but it's still very, very gray.
I had a follow-up question. I forgot it, so that's a good 2 seconds of silence there. Very gray, very sun. Seems like every Ontario city is just gray. There's no color anymore. Maybe that's exam season talking. There's no color anymore. That being said, before you got on air here, we were discussing the NHL playoff picture. Of course, we'll talk about that. We'll also discuss the Blue Jays game yesterday. I know you're a Blue Jays fan. I want to get your comments on that first. We'll talk about the NHL playoff picture. I was just talking about the Senators are in the first wild card position in the East, 81 points. No one's catching them. Canadians, second wild card position, 75 points. However, the Islanders, Rangers, and Blue Jackets are all within a win, all within 2 points of the Canadians. Canadians are on a 4-game losing streak. Do you think the Canadians hold on to that wild card position, Or do you see the Islanders, Rangers, Blue Jackets, maybe in the Red Wings sneaking up on them?
Well, the only thing I see the Canadians holding on to is this losing streak. I really don't see anything in their game that impresses me much. There was a big comeback, last week against Colorado, I believe, where they came back and then still lost in overtime, of course. And then this game last night, the night before, the 6-4 loss, there really is not anything with this team right now, maybe other than Christian Dvorak, that excites me. When we compare to several other wild card teams in the Eastern Conference that, you know, while the New York Islanders are not a strong playoff team, they have certainly been playing better than these Habs have. You look at the Rangers, who also, while middling, have been playing fairly good hockey. I see Ottawa, of course, as being the far and away wild card team, maybe even passing the Leafs. I mean, there's 10 games left. Anything can happen. I wouldn't bet on it, but hey. But I absolutely would pick one of the two New York teams to swiftly overtake Montreal.
If the Rangers make the playoffs, do you give JT Miller the key to the city?
I mean, that's a bit of a sore subject with me as a Vancouver fan. I'm not going to lie to you, but I mean, this New York Rangers team—it feels odd. You were mentioning how they have so many players on this roster that have been of superstar caliber in the past, in very recent past. We're not talking about, you know, you were talking about your Senators from 2017. It's not like we're talking about guys who were superstars a decade ago. We're talking about guys that were superstars, top five at their respective positions, only last year. And we're seeing a bit of a fall off from Shesterkin and Fox and Zibanejad and even Panarin. So it's really odd to see just why they're all collectively playing worse. But you know, it's JT Miller is definitely a part of making that team better, as much as it hurts to say. I think there is a distinct difference between the pre and post JT Miller Rangers. Now, key to the city, we might have to hold off until they win a cup, but I mean, the conversation definitely is there.
We're turning our attention to the Western division here. The Blues, from out of nowhere, have steamrolled and getting that second wild card position in the West. They're on an 8-game winning streak. For a while there, for the past month, it was between the Canucks, between the Flames. Really, they're jockeying it back and forth for a while there. Neither of those teams wanted that position. For whatever reason, they kept losing when they had it, and then they kept winning when they didn't have it. They couldn't make up their minds. From out of nowhere, the Blues said, fine, I'll take it. Have an 8-game winning streak. They're 8-1-1 their last 10, and have just gone on an insane run, and now find themselves with 85 points for that second wild card position. The next best are your Canucks, with only 80 points, with 10 games. They have 2 games in hand on the Blues. The Flames have 79 points. They're not out of it either. However, if anyone's going to catch the Blues, it will be your Canucks, who have won their last 2 games with 2 games in hand, 5 points down from the Blues. Could a miracle happen? Could the Canucks come back and snag that final playoff position? Or do you think it's kind of a wash, and you think it's the Blues for the playoffs?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I watched that St. Louis Blues game that the Canucks lost. And the recent one, I think it went to a shootout, actually. There's been a lot of overtime wins and shootout wins for the Canucks this year, and, you know, just not regulation finishes. That's kind of been the story of the Canucks season. And watching that game, watching the Calgary one a little before it, watching the New Jersey one a little after, I'm watching these Canucks play, and they seem to have a problem with pulling away or keeping their lead when they do. And that is not a sign of a strong team. A strong team, to me, should have no problem beating teams that they are better than by more than one goal, especially in regulation. And St. Louis has not shown any issue with doing that. St. Louis has been one of the hottest teams since the trade deadline. There's no other way of putting it. They have been completely insanely good.
I think
And
I
I
learned they have the
really,
best record since that trade deadline.
yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. And I mean, I've been saying it all year. This is a massively underrated roster. You put Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou, Braden Schenk, like those guys at the top, they're not like, they're not your household names, but they are no slouches either, and they're proving it. Colton Parayko is a massive one. I know he's probably just as fundamental to their success as anybody on that team. Of course, Binnington and Nett always raises questions, but I really do not see St. Louis falling off anytime soon. And Vancouver is going to have to play the best hockey of the year while missing several key pieces like Pettersson, like Höglander, like Hughes if he goes out again, because he's been shaky. There's just so much going against the Canucks and going for St. Louis right now that I do not see it as a possibility. Well, I see it as a possibility. I don't see it as a likelihood.
Knowing the Canucks history, it would be a very Canucks thing to like rush Pettersson, Höglander back to try to make a push for the playoffs, only for them to get injured worse and then miss the playoffs.
I absolutely agree.
That's just a that's not like a question. That's just a Canucks trip. I don't know.
I mean, no, you're absolutely right. For me, I've always like obviously there's value in making the playoffs, but personally, it's like I would absolutely rather getting a 10th overall or better pick in a draft than making the first round of the playoffs and losing in 4 games or 5 games, even 6 games. I think just as a franchise, obviously you don't want to miss the playoffs, but for this Canucks team right now that really doesn't have much of a farm to speak of at all. I mean, we've seen Lekkomäki come up to median success. We've seen Linus Karlsson, Max Sass, and some of these guys. But really, other than Tom Willander and I guess Celebrini's brother, even if you want to go that far, there isn't a lot that this team has coming into the league over the next 2, 3 years that really excites me. So, I mean, yeah, it'd be nice if they could make a playoff run, and yeah, it'd be nice if they could win a couple of games here and there. But really, the best thing for this franchise genuinely might be to just lose out the rest of the way. Make sure you keep Pettersson safe. I mean, he's been injured before. The skating has been an issue because of his leg injuries. Making that worse cannot help the franchise, even if they do make the playoffs. Not that I, want them to purposely sit these healthy guys if they are healthy and, throw games. But if that does end up being the case, if they do sit their star players and they do lose games, in the long run, I cannot see that hurting.
See, I say rushing back from injury as a joke, but that being said, Quinn Hughes throughout this season has always seemed like he's been playing injured. Do you think he's come back a couple times, perhaps a bit too early? As much as the Canucks he wanted to make, be in a playoff standing, be above the playoff line throughout the year, it has seemed that Quinn Hughes has come back from injury a bit too quickly. Do you agree with that? It seems like he's been playing injured almost the entire year. Would you rather them have sat him, even though it means you're losing more games? Quinn Hughes, arguably one of the most viable players to his team in the league. Look at the record in goals scored and goal differential with Quinn Hughes versus without Quinn Hughes in the lineup. It's completely night and day. As much as you want your best player in the roster, is there a line between, perhaps he's, you're hurting him by having him come in too quickly?
No, I absolutely agree. I think that, like you said, I mean, we saw Quinn Hughes. I saw Quinn Hughes. He was playing in Toronto, and I got to go to that game. I didn't realize after he got 2 points, a goal and assist, that he was playing with a splint on his right hand. He only had the use of like 3 fingers. That kind of thing, while it was, entertaining for me as a fan to go and watch him play that successfully, obviously you want your best players on the ice as much as possible. But again, these are the kind of things that have been known to hurt careers in any professional sport. I mean, like we've had hockey examples. You've had Sidney Crosby and his concussions that thank God did not impact him to the point where he couldn't, you know, go on and be Mr. Consistency that we've seen him be. But there, for every story like that, there's been many others where players were rushed back from injury and they have not recovered. If you want a current example, look at Thatcher Demko. Again, goaltenders are different, but he's been rushed back from injury 3-4 times now over the last 2 years. And I mean, how's that working out for them now? They played a great game against the Islanders, but he's not looked the same since he's been coming back from these injuries early. Look at Kevin Durant in that big Raptors Golden State finals, right? Obviously he's playing all right now, but they rushed him back and the next 3 years for him were, you know, nothing short of hell. I love watching Quinn Hughes play, and you're absolutely right. I'd go a step farther and say that he is the most valuable player for his team. I mean, you talk about McDavid and Draisaitl, that Edmonton can still win games without them. I genuinely do not believe that Vancouver would have won more than 15 games this year had Quinn Hughes not been on the roster.
I think that's the bad thing about that is that sounds like an exaggeration, but that's legitimately a valid point, and most people would agree with you. That's how good Quinn Hughes is, and that's how much the Canucks need Quinn Hughes. But there, of course, is a line between one, have your star player play, but having them come back from being hurt, being injured a bit too quickly, and perhaps hampering them in their performance down the stretch, and perhaps hurting their career long term. Speaking of long term, we're going to switch over to the MLB, and a long term disappointment are the Blue Jays. Over the past couple seasons, they dropped their opening day game yesterday, 12-2 at home at SkyDome at the Rogers Center against Baltimore Orioles. Now, I preface this by saying Baltimore Orioles are a very strong team. You know, it's a tough AL East. You have the Yankees, the Orioles in there, you have the Red Sox in there, all that fun stuff. However, opening day loss at home, 12-2. Spring training, they win their league, and then opening day loss, lose 12-2. Jose Berrios gives up 3 home runs. Orioles get 6 home runs. What do you make of it? They play again tonight, second game of their series. Tell me your initial thoughts on that opening day victory for the Orioles and loss for the Blue Jays.
Well, let me tell you something about those Baltimore Orioles. Those young white kids can hit. They all look the exact same. I think they came out of the same cloning booth. And they are all completely ridiculous. We look at Mountcastle. We look at Rutschman. We look at even Holiday was swinging the bat nice. I liked a couple of the hacks he took, even though the success for him wasn't quite where he might have wanted it to be. It was ridiculous. It was a completely ridiculous showing by the entire Blue Jays pitching staff and their offense. Now, this is not a good Baltimore pitching staff. We saw some of those players come in. Sir Anthony Dominguez from the Phillies last year came over to Baltimore. One of the worst spring trainings I have ever seen, was not a good pitcher last year, and he completely shut out the Blue Jays. He lights out. We had Zach Eflin start the game, I think it was, for Baltimore. Gave up 1 home run, and really not much else after that. This Blue Jays team, fundamentally, again, it's one game, but this team just was not ready to play baseball yesterday. Now, I pray that they figure something out tonight. Of course, I won't get to watch it. Shout out Apple TV. But it's just not okay. It really is not okay. This is the first game of the season. You've made some big acquisitions in the offseason, and this is what we have to show for it. 4 hits. The opposing team having more home runs than we do hits. You can't win baseball games like that, obviously. And that's not a really good sign for the future. This Baltimore team will be one of the best offenses in the league. I am very, very confident in saying that. If they are the best offense in the league, I would not be surprised. I think we look at guys like Arizona. We look at teams like the Mets and Baltimore. Those are my big 3 right now, especially because guys like Mookie Betts and Freeman are out for the Dodgers. So not being on your pitching A game the way that Berrios clearly wasn't, the way Rodriguez clearly was not, is just not acceptable against a division rival, no less. Now, Baltimore's pitching staff is very, very weak this year. I think that's going to be their biggest flaw. They remind me of the 2021 Blue Jays, where a lot of young, good hitters with not a lot of pitching prowess. They remind me of that. So getting deeper into these series, you know, game 2, game 3, We'll have to see if the Blue Jays can do more. I don't think they can. Call me a pessimist. I'm probably right. I hope I'm not. But I just do not see the Blue Jays being able to do anything against these Baltimore Orioles. Even if they do put up runs, Baltimore is going to put up more.
Of course, the Blue Jays lose their first game of a 162-game season. And I'm saying it's over. I think you got to sell the franchise. That being said, of course, it is game one of game 162. That being said, I've asked this question before. I think before kind of spring training started, we got an idea of the roster and the opening day split. And there again, notable names left out of that Jays starting lineup yesterday. That being said, I asked this before. The Blue Jays, do you see a chance at making the postseason or a wild card game like they have in the past? Or do you think the season is going to just ride out? They're going to miss the playoffs. Guerrero's going to leave. Bichette's going to leave. Do you think there's a bit of light in the season, or do you think it will likely be doom and gloom?
Well, it's hard to say. And I think, I mean, like every baseball team, it really, really relies on both the pitching and the offense. You can't have a good team without both, or at least very, very, very elite in one and decent in another. The Blue Jays don't have that. The Blue Jays are going to need very solid play from both their pitching and from their offense. The defense behind the pitching has never been an issue. I'm not afraid of that. I think once the Blue Jays pitchers figure things out, I think they'll be golden because they have one of, if not the best defense in the league behind them. But getting to a point where that matters, where we're just, because as good as your defense is, if you're giving up home runs, it does not matter unless Kevin Pillar is out in the outfield. But so that's one thing that I need to see change. The offense needs to be good. Now, Guerrero Jr. is going to be a massive part of that. And if he has a bad season, I feel like it'll be much easier to re-sign him, naturally. If he has a good season, of course, that'll make the Blue Jays better. But the Blue Jays have committed, or at least seeming to have committed, to being a contender this year. And the only way they're going to do that is if they go out and acquire a bat. Now, Luis Robert from the Chicago White Sox has been in a lot of conversation lately, and I would like to see him come to the Blue Jays. He's one of my favorite players. I think he is truly a five-tool player as much as anyone can be. So he's one. I know Luis Arraez of the San Diego Padres is also on the trading block, so to speak. His name's been thrown out a little bit. He'd give some very, very solid batting and on-base numbers. But really, the way the team is right now, unless we see literal peak seasons from half of the roster, pitching and hitting, I just don't see that they could even make the playoffs, never mind be successful once they get there.
Looking at the playoff odds right now, the 2025 World Series odds for strong contenders, we have the likes of the Yankees, Orioles, Red Sox, Astros, Mets, Diamondbacks, Rangers, Braves, so on and so forth. Out of those teams, or any other team that you want to shout for making the World Series, it's very likely not going to be Canada's team, the Toronto Blue Jays. So we have to look south of the border here. Who are your World Series favorites? Who are your teams that you can think you will go on a deep run and perhaps come away with the championship this year?
Well, I mean, any conversation like this has to start, of course, with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Hate them or love them, they're a good team. They've put together probably the best on-paper roster of any team we've seen maybe since your 2011 Yankees. That said, you were talking about Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman being out. Those are two massive injuries that would cripple pretty much any other team in the league. Whether the Dodgers are any different, I don't know, but they are definitely my number one pick. Number two, I like the Diamondbacks. I really, really like the Diamondbacks. They had the best offense in the league last year, scoring the most runs with, I think, the most home runs as well. And that pitching staff with Zach Gallen and, well, there's just too many to name because they are that good. But of course, headlined by Zach Gallen. They're just They're elite. They're unstoppable. I would not be surprised if we saw an Arizona Diamondbacks World Series. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw them win the World Series. So those are my two National League picks. Of course, you can't count out the Mets getting Juan Soto after being already a pretty good team. Phillies, of course, as well. Realistically speaking, the World Series will be won by a National League team. That is the bottom line from this, because there's just so much talent out there. The American League has a couple of good teams, but I really do not think there's anything in the American League that can compete with those National League giants. Ironically, not the Giants. I think they're very bad. Over to the American League, really, like, you could say Texas. Boston has a good shot, maybe, if their young guys pull through. Houston even could be a dark horse pick, depending on how well their players play. But realistically, yeah, no, it's one of those National League teams. I think there's five or six NL teams that I would pick over anybody in the American League.
Just a throw it back there. You mentioned the 2011 New York Yankees roster. I figured Jeter Rodriguez is on the roster, which I was right. But I Googled the roster and I was looking at the first six in their starting lineup. At one, Russell Martin; two, Mark Teixeira; three, Robinson Cano; four, Derek Jeter; five, Alex Rodriguez; six, Brett Gardner. That's an elite top six. But then you look at the Dodgers, who you kind of compare that roster construction to. They have Shohei Ohtani, Blake Snell, Clayton Kershaw, starting pitchers, and then Ohtani is designated hitter. You have Will Smith, Max Muncy, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Andy Pages, Conforto, all these terrific names. So you talk about roster construction, those two teams have terrifically elite names to them. As we wrap up the episode here, any last things in the sports world you want to hit on before we wrap it up?
Yeah, shout out to my Sudbury Wolves OHL hockey playoffs starting tonight against the Kingston Frontenacs. I don't know, your Kitchener Rangers, are they in the playoffs right now? I'd
Oh,
imagine they are.
they're in the playoffs, all right.
Who are they up against this? I didn't actually see that.
They are up against
He
the
doesn't
Flint
know what against
Flyers.
sports are. Who's that? Sorry. Oh, Sioux Fiber, yes.
Wait, I think I was trying to think. I'm like they're I did not I haven't looked at the playoff bracket yet, but I'm like they're third. I know they're third in the West. I'm trying to do the They're against Flint, of course,
Yes.
in the playoffs.
Well, that'll be a good series, I would imagine. I mean, Flint's shown some, very solid play over the year. Of course, not the favorite. Kitchener would be in that conversation. You excited for that? I mean, you got to be getting out to a couple of games at least, I would imagine.
Oh, I'm sure I will. It's kind of during the exam season, but I'll look to see which one kind of lines up my schedule because I've got to catch OHL local junior hockey playoffs. It's awesome. That being said, we'll talk about the Wolves for a second. They're against the Kingston Frontenacs, who, of course, the Wolves at sixth in their division, Frontenacs third, well, sixth in the conference, third in the conference. Wolves 32 regulation wins, Frontenacs 40 regulation wins. That being said, Wolves again play very, very hard-nosed type of hockey. What's your prediction for the series? How do you think it's going to go?
Well, it all depends on one guy. And I hate to say that because you never like hearing that, especially when the one guy is on your team. But Quentin Musty is the complete catalyst for this team, not even just this series, but just for this team's success, even if they do make it past Kingston. And we've seen some injury issues with the guy. We've seen some suspension issues with the guy, which you never like to see from your, superstar first round draft pick
Wolves hockey.
forward. But hey, he's a passionate guy. He likes the game. He plays the game the right way, strong and physical. And I can appreciate that about a young kid. I say young kid, he's like 2 years younger than I am.
A child.
He it might as well be. But no, it'll be a good series. Of course, Kingston being favored, Sudbury's going to have to lay off the penalty minutes. They've had to do that all year with little to no success at that. If you go look at the statistics, I believe they are still first in the league, maybe second behind Saginaw. But it'll be an interesting series. It'll be a hard-fought series. Kingston is not getting out of this series without at least a couple injuries, I would imagine, although you never like to see it. It will be a gritty, tough series, and I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe Sudbury goes on to face Barrie in the next round. We get to see our hometown team, which would be very, very cool. But until then, we'll just have to see how this Kingston Sudbury series shapes out.
Course, the OHL playoffs kick off tonight, and of course, if you're here in the Waterloo region, it kicks off at home at Kitchener tonight at 7 p.m. for a nice Friday night puck drop as the Flint Firebirds visit the Kitchener Rangers tonight, and then Sunday night, and then game 3 and 4 held in Flint in Michigan April 1st, April 3rd, and then they rotate home for game 5, 6. And 7, of course, for those listening from Sudbury, of course, Wolves and Frontenacs are doing business down there to make sure to check out tickets for those games when they hit Sudbury. Or maybe you're in Kingston listening to this. We are known for our provincial reach here at Golden Bold. Make sure you look up what those games are in Kitchener to see your home team, the Frontenacs. That being said, thank you to Jackson Lee of CKLU 96.7 for hopping on the call here. Discussing NHL, MLB, and a bit of OHL. Thanks for hopping on the call, Jackson.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on Golden Bold, chat some sports up with you, make predictions, kind of doomer mentality a little bit. It's always a good time.
That's what we do here. We are always doom and gloom because it's generally, we're talking about the Blue Jays. That's really all it is. That being said, we'll say goodbye to Jackson, and we'll wrap up the show here. Again, reminder, OHL Kitchener Rangers doing battle tonight at the Odd down the road. Game number one tonight, Flint Firebirds at your Kitchener Rangers, 7 p.m. I mentioned they play again Sunday night. That's a correction. They play Sunday afternoon. I didn't catch that. It's at 2 p.m. Puck drop matinee, March 30th, also at home at the Odd, of course. And of course, the Rangers visit Flint April 1st, April 3rd. And if necessary, Game 5, April 4th, come back to the Tri-Cities down in Kitchener. April 6th, they go back to Flint. And then, if need be, Game number 7, home ice advantage, goes to the Kitchener Rangers, as that'll be April 8th at 7. Hopefully, it doesn't go that long. Hopefully, the Rangers dispose the Firebirds fairly quickly, and we get to see the Rangers move on in the quest or an OHL championship. That being said, it all starts tonight. Game number one, 7 p.m. puck drop at the Odd. And that's it for Golden Bold here on Radio Laurier. My name is Ian Bailey. A bit of a variety show today. Talked Laurier Athletics for a bit. Talked NHL. Talked MLB. All that fun stuff. And again, make sure to check out the Kitchener Rangers playoffs this weekend. Have a great afternoon, everyone.